My guest this week is the simply wonderful Ruby Wax. And for somebody who's written extensively on her own depression and mental health issues, I was delighted to hear that she's in remarkably good fettle during lockdown.
So for 2 years, I've been really happy. Is that bad?
No, that's all I want for you. Why is that bad?
No, I know, because people like bad news. You know,
I don't like bad news. If you tell me you're happy, that makes me happy. Okay. And maybe I'm atypical. I only want people I care about to be happy. In fact, I want people I don't even care about to be happy. I think it's very pertinent at the moment what other people do, what other countries do, because there seems to be this glib sense of English exceptionalism at the moment, which means even though Germany are palpably doing things better, we won't copy them. And yet your book's all about being, you know, one world, a global view, and saying, why not cherry pick things from other places?
Yeah, but they already have cherry picked. That's what makes me, that's why, you know, there's a little glow in my eye, because leave aside Finland, but in just an example, there's a couple schools called, and I went to more than this, Reach 2, disadvantaged neighborhoods, I mean the highest crime rate, free schooling, state schooling, and the teachers take these kids that could be potentially sociopaths, you know, yeah. Their brains are frozen with trauma, and they teach them from their 5 to 11 years old, they teach them empathy. And they teach these kids, you know, they defrost them. They have to go around in little circles and say what they appreciate about everybody. And one kid turned to me and said, I just love that you care about us. They don't know who I am, care about us enough to care. Then the teachers say, you know, there's no such thing as a stupid question, which I would have flourished. And so these kids think out of the box. Do you know, they work as a team. Every single chapter I did, it's all about community. And these kids get real pride when a kid that's proficient in something helps a kid that isn't. And then they learn to lower their stress, because we can do that with a little knowledge about how the brain works. So they have tools when they know they're in full fight and flight. They recognize it. And then they go to a little corner and there's a red piece of paper, yellow, green. And if they know they're in red and they're, you know, they're about to take a test, they can get up and see I'm in red, and they have breathing balls, you know, that expand and contract, and they have little lots of things, but they have a jar that has glitter in it, and they shake it, and then it's all murky, and they know that's their mind, and as the glitter settles, their mind settles, and their parents, many of whom are criminals, built all the kids a zen den. And there's gardening, and these kids didn't even know lettuce came out of the ground. I didn't either, but, and then they teach their parents to cook, but the kids teach the kids, because, you know what I mean? That's when they get really, and there you can see their excitement, and you can see them coming alive, even though you can see the effects of home life slightly shaking. But a little boy saying to me, you know, I'm feeling really nervous now. And once it's out, I go, well, you're making me nervous, you know. They talk about their feelings, and at the end, they all sang to me A Million Miles, which I hate, but they sang it, and they all, you could see that they were the hope of the future, and I wept, and I don't cry. I just sat there, because I'm on antidepressants. I had to hold my face like this, like squished up, because they made me cry so much.
That's
in England.
This? In that was UK. In England. So this is a try, presuming this is a try, this is a pilot scheme, presumably.
There's a few schools in England now teaching, they call it different things. There's something called Dot B, and some schools are offering that. You know, they know that we can't keep going, you know, making these cookie cutter kids and regurgitating information, vomiting it, They have to change the wheel, you know, and some schools are. So that, you see what I mean? I could go and go, I did go to China and see a seriously fucked system.
Seriously? I mean,
oh my God, these kids, they sleep about an hour, and the mothers are really proud how little they sleep. Yeah. So when I went in the classroom, they're like doing a mantra of mathematics. And I said to the teacher, is there any depression here? And she kind of winced and she said, no, no depression. Lots of suicide, but no depression.
Because they're famously not linked.
They're not linked.
If only there's some way to stop suicide.
Well, clearly in China, they've got the idea. They just get rid of the kids. So when they see there's a stressed kid, they're sent to the country.
Is that a euphemism? In the same way that, you know, we know that, that certain sort of Muslim populations are sent into education camps. It sounds a little like that, doesn't it?
It's going a trade-off. It's like when you do a trade. What's that when you move to a family in another country and they come to you?
Oh, exchange the students. Exchange, yes.
Yeah, they sent him to gulags. They showed me a red room, which was a padded cell. So if the kid's feeling a little, the word isn't stressed, that doesn't exist. They go into that padded cell. It's a red room. And they bounce off the walls. This is in China. And then there's music suddenly plays. Music comes on, like horrible, horrible carnival music. And they all stop where they are and do and rub their eyes and the sides of their heads, because that improves their vision, which because they've blinded themselves from studying all night. So however smart they are, they're really stupid.
But it's also what's interesting about that is that whether they say they are or not, they're acknowledging there's stress building, but they haven't developed an organic way of a child saying, I have need. Instead, it's like, right, it is time to have need now. It is time for you to be stressed now.
Yes, yes.
What if a child was stressed 20 minutes ago? No, I always remember a therapist saying to me, I was just said, oh, you know, we were talking about family and I was talking about how fair my parents were and how even if they had one chocolate bar left, they would split it in three and the three kids would have a third each. And my therapist looked at me rather quizzically and said, but what if you needed more? And that's always stayed with me, because a child in that situation might not need a padded room, or might have needed it yesterday, or might not, you know, and or another class might have needed that. But it's that one size fits all approach to mental health. It just can't suit anybody.
Now in England, they are, not everybody can memorize like moi. So some classes, let's say they're learning about the Vikings or whatever, some kids painted, some kids acted, some kids, you know, because there is the history, by reading the history of the Vikings isn't completely accurate. You know what I'm saying? So by memorizing exactly what Vlad, the guy with the horns, ate for lunch.
Vlad the Horny.
Vlad the Horny. I didn't want to say it because I know this is a children's show.
Yeah, well, that's what we're aiming for.
But what's the difference if you memorize it, if you get the essence of it? You know, and you love it. That's what they do now. They follow. What's the kid curious? Once you get that curiosity, that kid's lit on fire. And those are the great schools.
And we process information in different ways. Like some people are visual, some people are, you go by sound.
But nobody ever, and we know that everybody that can memorize is such a decent person. You know, the people that get the highest grade. Oh, this is, when I was in China, I had to do, I had to go to a school that's called Wellington College, where they are introducing mindfulness because it's based on the Wellington College in London. Mm. So certain kids get to go in there in contrast. So I did some of my show and I had a translator woman, and I said, I was talking about how important it was to fail. The English teachers were laughing. The Chinese parents, there's no expression that expresses what their faces look like.
No, I've had gigs like that. I'd recognize those faces.
You know what? It's like melted skin. Yeah. So they're looking at me and I say,
it's Dolly on a bonfire, isn't it? Yeah.
She's moving her hands to translate. And there's a line where I say, I was really good at failure, you know, because I knew I could fail, try again, fail, try again. And I said, and all those girls I went to high school with that were cheerleaders and they got straight A's, well, now they're all crack whores. Her hands stopped moving so quickly. Well, how do you translate that into China? But clearly you can't. It was a showstopper. So
I bet it was. All I want to see is the footage of you just doing in front of a load of bewildered children and some crying parents. They'll be talking about that for years to come. They'll be going,
they're looking it up.
You remember
now
when that lady came and she started talking about crack whores, and we had to, and then we had to send her away.
There's,
you know,
probably
what? They'll all be in a padded rubber room now because of what you've done.
Well, you know, they arrest you there for littering. So why I haven't been tortured, I don't know. Do you know what they...
Go on.
Another thing they do that's so extraordinary is on Sundays, parents line up in a park, and I mean hundreds of them, they have umbrellas open and descriptions of their children on it, like Tinder on an umbrella, saying Su Mei Ling, looking for husband. She worked at Goldman Sachs and studied at LSE. That's the parents are advertising their kids for marriage on Sunday. These people have it together.
Using simply their umbrellas, earnings bracket and their qualifications as the as
and the
sort
qualifications
of
are, yeah. Man says, I am 10,000th richest. They name how, because they grade them on how much money they have. Looking for a woman who, you know, worked at Lehman Brothers also looking for, and then they give their grades because they have to get a high grade. Otherwise they're stuck in a factory for the rest of their lives. Anyway, it's a wonderful group of people, but I went there just to then give contrast to some of the schools in England and what they're doing. Not really a contrast, just to say, here's the devil and here's the angel.
2020 hasn't been the easiest year for anyone. And for those of us who struggle with stress and anxiety, it's been a proper nightmare. But that's where Grass & Co can help. If you've listened to previous episodes of the podcast, you'll know that Grass & Co is a premium CBD range that blends the highest quality CBD with therapeutic botanical ingredients. The organic CBD and botanical formulations have been specially created to relax your mind and soothe your body. To find out more, head over to grassandco.com/hour. Now, some people who've already tried CBD oils think that maybe the challenging taste is going to be something you have to put up with, but not with Grass & Co, because they've got a range of fantastic flavours that blend CBD with the likes of ginger, turmeric and orange, chamomile and mint. My favourite, ginger and turmeric. It feels like it's doing me good, and then it chills me right down. Grass & Co are the CBD wellness experts and are committed to delivering the very best products to their customers. They only use 100% natural CBD and botanicals in their products, which deliver the uplifting results that you can feel instantly. Grass & Co, I'm delighted to say, have been a long-time sponsor of the podcast. You can now get 25% off the entire Grass & Co Calm, Ease and Rest CBD ranges. Plus, you'll also get free shipping. Just head over to www.grassandco.com/hour and use the discount code HOUR, that's H-O-U-R in capitals, at the checkout. Grass & Co. Life enhanced by nature. I'm passionate about schooling because that is, without recognising the individual in the environment, the individual is completely lost. You can take a child, however damaged, however difficult their personal circumstances, and absolutely recalibrate the trajectory of their entire life. Just one teacher did that for me. Just one person can absolutely change the landscape for a kid.
In a good way?
In such a good way. Oh, because okay. They realised, I mean, I suppose people looking at me, and I'm sure looking at you would go, okay, you know, bookish, worked hard.
Get out of here.
But you know what?
You are. You're wearing the glasses. I got the D's and was put in.
I'm disruptive. I was completely disruptive.
Slow class. D's.
God. But that's because you weren't taught properly because you're super smart.
No, I was traumatized by my, you know, the sitcom going on in my home life.
I always remember the sitcom. I remember you saying your mum, correct me if I'm wrong, but it stayed with me. She basically put cling film wrapper over the sofa. Is that right? Did you say that? So you couldn't sit on the actual sofa.
So you when you sat on it, it went, and then when you sat up, and my grandmother walked around with bits of cling film sticking to her and on the dog because my mom didn't like the dog humping Omi's arm. So there was a little cling film on Omi's arm so that the semen wouldn't get on her clothes.
Okay. Well, that there's a certain practical positive sort of, I mean, no disrespect, but you don't want to go around with semen on your clothes, but it just,
that's practical advice.
It's practical, you know, there's something going on there that's positive, but it also, the cling film on the sofa means that essentially you're being told as a child, don't get comfortable.
Mm, and yeah, well, there were so many messages coming in that was the good news. The cling film was the nice stuff. The using the wire brush on my teeth was the hard stuff.
You're joking.
No, my dad used a belt, you know, so not all the time, but enough that I remember that that's why I couldn't read when I was a kid because when I saw those kids at Reach 2, I get trauma and these kids' lives were being saved. You know, had I gone to school and the teacher showed some care and compassion, I would have been a genius.
I think you are a genius. It's just you're an autodidact. You found your own way. You educated yourself in what you needed to survive and thrive. And for me, the things, you know, I discovered very late in life that I have attention deficit issues. It makes perfect sense. The things that I was interested in, I never got anything other than an A grade. because it was just like fascinating. I'm going to read everything about this. The things I wasn't interested in, I failed and failed and failed. I was in the D stream. I was with, you know, D. I remember having a maths book slam, thick SMP maths book slammed on my head so hard it made my teeth slam together because, you know, teachers were allowed to do that then. And just being called a dunce and an idiot, and you'll never amount to anything. And just
and look
being
at
beaten,
us now.
Beaten over the head.
They were allowed to do that?
Yeah, he just, I remember. I remember almost seeing, thinking, God, I can almost see stars. I now I know what it's like. It was so, it was such a violent thing to do. Whilst, and that rhythmic, repetitious smacking down of the book and being
They were
told,
allowed to do that?
I presume so. I mean, well, this was way before parents couldn't smack kids. Although I have to say, you know, I didn't get smacked much as a kid. I was very lucky. I mean, my parents were
I said my recent. School... I was the rebel in my school, but that didn't improve my grades. I put sardines under the lighting fixtures. This takes this is creative. Under the lighting fixtures on the ceiling. And for about a week, nobody could tell where the rotting smell was. And we all went home.
No, you got time off school for it?
Yeah, I did things that were brilliant then. But of course, you didn't get A's for that.
No, it's a shame, but it's dastardly. Did your classmates know you'd done it and love you for it? Did they love you for your naughty?
Yeah, yeah. I was popular for it. I made a volcano that really erupted in science. I think I used that powder, that Syntec.
Yes.
I think I did that. And it blew up. We had to evacuate.
I was always in the... Did you have a fume cupboard? I'm obsessed with a fume cupboard. I don't even know if they had that now, but we had a fume cupboard where just shit could happen and you could blow up anything.
Oh, like and the red padded cell.
Exactly. And I used to pretty much climb in there and just detonate anything and then be just physically dragged out. We'd have a Bunsen burner on the desk and before the teacher even begun, I'd be lighting stuff, seeing what happened if you threw some powder onto it. Because I didn't understand. It's only now as an adult where I've developed, like you have, a different way of learning and negotiating and navigating the world. But I finally think, oh, I could do some physics now. I might try and do a physics
level. That's my fantasy now. Every night I'm on the computer and I'm watching shows about quantum physics all night long. I don't understand a word, but I'm fascinated. No. Not a word. But I'm there. I'm with them. You know.
String theory. What is that?
Oh, I know. Call me at 2 a.m. I know. Then when I wake up, it's all gone.
Because what's great is when you're a kid, you think science has answers. And then when you get into the world of quantum, it's so philosophical. I listened to that, Theory of... what is it? The Carlo...
Yeah, I have his book.
Yes. Okay, I listened to the audiobook. Wait, I was hypnotized. I didn't understand a word of it. Not one word of it, but it was...
Right here. Do you see how obsessed?
Yes.
That's his book.
Okay, Carlo Rovelli, for anyone that wants...
All these books on psych and physics. I don't even know how to spell it. Okay, I held up his book, so now I'm going to hold up. This is my book. Okay, I know this is an audio.
And now
show.
For the good news.
Yeah.
To the Future with Love, which I love that as a subtitle. Right, the Carlo Rovelli thing, right? I listened to the audio book, and he starts talking about how time moves at a different speed in the mountains to the valleys.
The audio book on what? What's
time.
It called?
Let me just, I'm going to find it now. Hang on. In real time. Hang on. I
need to do this because I need to stay up tonight.
He's an Italian theoretical physicist and writer. Let's look at his book.
I know this because I'm holding his book. It's the most inspiring thinker
the
of our age.
The Order of Time, L'Ordine del Tempo. The Order of Time. Okay, it's read by Benedict Cumberbatch. So imagine those silky vowels.
Oh, no, you've ruined it for me.
No, do you know what? He's on point. And you listen, he's going to tell you that time moves differently in the mountains to the way that it moves in the valley. And your mind is going to be blown. And then the next day, you just start crying for no reason. And then it's gone. And I couldn't tell you why it moves like that or why it moves like that.
It's called what? Give me the name again.
The Order of Time.
Order of Time.
L'Ordine del Tempo.
Okay.
I wouldn't recommend listening to it in the original Italian. No, it wouldn't make as much sense. If I had listened to it in Italian, it would mean no more or less.
No, I know. What's the difference? What's the difference? Carl Sagan and I are having a relationship.
Oh, I love Carl Sagan.
Oh my God. How sexy is that man?
Carl Sagan is, he's omnigent, isn't he?
If
he's
there for everything. If he wasn't dead, I would be dating him.
It's
always little things that stop the relationship.
But in many ways, he's still, you can still have some
an
kind
affair.
Of relationship. Yes.
Yeah.
You can have an atemporal affair with Carl Sagan.
No.
Through the Mists of Time.
Brian Cox. I'm not as much, but I met Brian Cox once. This is pathetic. And I was so intimidated. They keep asking me to go on that show. I said, this is how I spoke to Brian Cox. And then I got this sentence out. I was next to him at dinner. And I wanted him to like me. So I said, Brian, let me get this right. If there are infinite parallel universes and I'm eating with one fork, how do I get it into my mouth or something? Infinite forks. And again, you know that look of, it's like something has disintegrated and defecated on your arm.
It's like you're sitting in a puddle of your own feces. Yeah.
That's how Brian Cox looked at me. Oh, it gets worse.
Looking up at a god.
It gets worse. There was another guy called Carlos, who he said to me was a cosmologist. And I said,
of course he was. Carlos, the cosmologist.
I leant forward and I said, what's the best facelift you've ever done?
Okay.
Cosmologist knows what happened like a quarter of a zillion second after the Big Bang. Now imagine my state. Okay. Well, anyway, my anus
is shut. I know what
happened, Dove. Nothing.
But after the Big Bang, matter.
No, I know now, Sue. I know now, but I didn't know then. And they didn't think it was funny, me asking about a facelift. I wasn't being funny. Let's forget it, because I'm going to have a relapse.
But you know what? Do you know what? All questions, for the cosmologist, all questions surely are valid, because in another universe, you are asking
for a facelift.
Or anything. You're asking past the cheese, but you could also be talking eloquently about quantum mechanics.
Yeah, but you weren't there to explain that.
I can accept the fact, because I know you to be a trustworthy person, that it tanked proper.
I wasn't being funny. I really thought a cosmologist was the guy who does cosmetic surgery. Wasn't being funny.
Listen, anyone with an ologist, do you know what? The ologist is greatly demeaned once we knew that there was a rumpologist. Once we knew that there was an actual word for somebody who studied the future through looking at someone's ass, the whole intellectual landscape was for me denuded. Jackie Stallone was a rumpologist. Bless her soul.
There's nothing to say. In another universe, I'm not listening to you.
Almost in this universe, by the look of your face. So why are you in Scotland, okay? You could be anywhere.
I could be anywhere. Well, and when I wrote the book, and now for the good news, there was a section on community. There was a chapter on community. So like business, I went to work at Patagonia in business, not the country, the sportswear company, because they are redefining what business should be doing and don't think they're not making a big profit. But I'm not talking about, I'm in community. What they're doing in cities is now extraordinary. In Copenhagen, again, we don't have to build it in London, but just understand they're making the buildings. There's parks between the buildings where people are encouraged to mingle because humans are born to do that. You don't have to, but there's the chance. So they say they want to make the journey as interesting as the destination. You know, loneliness is what causes mental distress, but let's put that aside. So I went to see communities in, they're called intentional communities, and that's where they have a meeting place, you know, and the ethos is equality, transparency, and authenticity. So they vote for, you know, what goes on in the community. They have, and let me just say that there's one in South London called Bedzed. It's got free housing. They do have a community center. It's in the middle of South London.
Okay.
And so women with babies can give it to other women. Older people, you know, have cooking and computer classes. They have a vegetable garden. So, you know, they're all out there in the fresh air. There's zero heating bills because, you don't have to have money. They know how to capture the heat. They know about the attention. They know about recycling, and it's not bullshit. You know, the proof is this existed for 25 years. So there are little communities dotted around, well, there's the world. And I've been to some of them, which are called intentional communities, where a town that's already established, or they build somewhere where people really want to live. They want to walk the talk. So I'm in one in Scotland now, because I think I might write a book. Not this is the title, but Finding Meaning in a World Without Any, where I'm in an eco-village. There's 600 people here, so I'm not alone. I work in the gardens, Me, I've never touched dirt. And I didn't like those
What?
kids. I didn't know that zucchini comes out of the ground. Who knew? So I work there and the food goes to the food bank. And then I, you know, all this thing, sustainable biomass heating, whatever, people yapping at dinner parties in London, they don't know what the. And I thought, you know, shut up or get off the pot, which means do something. So now I'm here and they do take their waste, right? And they turn it into like, you can use your shit and turn it into clean
Yeah.
water that grows flowers. So they do it here. They're not
A
just
reed
talking
bed
about it.
system. A reed
What?
bed system will turn shit into drinkable water. This episode of the podcast is sponsored by June's Journey. June's Journey is a captivating hidden object mobile game, free to download from iTunes or Google Play. The game is set in the roaring 20s and it looks fantastic. We follow amateur detective June Parker through beautifully crafted scenes as we try and solve the mystery of her sister's murder. It's a perfect escape when you have the spare 5 minutes and you need a break from the stresses of everyday life. I've been playing it loads over the last few weeks, and it's a great way to relax, but also to test my observational skills, because each scene is a new challenge, finding hidden objects and discovering more about the murder of Claire and Harry. The hundreds of colourful scenes keep the game fresh and vibrant, while the lightly challenging puzzles keep my brain active and engaged. I've found it, to be honest, the perfect balance of relaxing and challenging. If you enjoy puzzles, murder mysteries, and great stories, this game is perfect for you. You can download June's Journey now for your phone or tablets from either iTunes or Google Play, or simply by clicking the link in the description of this episode. So where in Scotland is it? I'm
It's called
fascinated by it.
Findhorn. It started off 58 years ago as a very, it's like the Vatican of the New Age. So nuts. So nuts. A woman had a vision while she was sitting on the loo that she
Course
must
she
come
did.
to Findhorn. Yeah. See, I keep a theme going. Vision that she must come here and start planting. This was a very straight English woman. Planting. It was a sand a dune, and she lived in a trailer. Well, what happened? I don't know, back then, 58 years ago, huge cabbages started growing on the sand. So scientists started coming
Okay.
and tech, you know, kids from tech schools and whatever. And they've been, there are things here that obviously the hippies are, you know, long gone, but now it has the highest condensation, not condensation, the highest concentration of startups, of
Oh,
young
yeah.
people doing all those environmental things. It's here, like saving forests and whatever, but they really are walking the talk. So again, I think if you're going to yap about the environment, learn how to do it or learn what it means. You know, there's companies now doing greenwashing to make money, you know, where they put wind machines, you know, in the men's loo to replace the hand dryers and, you know, telling people not to flush the toilet and they'll get a bonus. It's crap, but at least I'm seeing the real thing. And that's making me happy. I wrote
How long
about
were
it in
you
the
there
book
for?
a month. A month, and then I'm going to do other things that I touched on in the book. For example, I at the end of the book, I chose some charities where I think they walk the talk. You know, it's not through a big organization, but I went with Choose Love and Indigo, and I went with these young girls to Samos to work with the refugees, and they're hands-on. That's what I love, and they have the glow that I used to have in my eyes. So when a sewer needs built, they get it done. They get it done. They don't have to wait till somebody does a dinner party serving, you know,
Yeah.
a deer that costs 200 pounds. They get it done. And so now I'm facing these women, you know, and I'm thinking, what can I bring to the table? Like nothing, but at least I'm there, you know, and you see it. And when you feel that compassion, it's really good for your health. So I stayed there, and what I'm saying, and after this, I'm going to go to Lesbos. I'm not saying bully for me, but I like when I get that heart thing. I didn't know that it felt so good. And well, you'll like this. When I was with those women, and I was with this really beautiful girl, this is just one who was called Princess, and she had purple dreadlocks and really was stunning. And I said to her, oh, what are you doing here? Completely composed, she says, except her leg was shaking. That was the only giveaway. She said, my husband is a musician, and he took film of a riot here where the police were beating up, you know, people in the public, and he put that online. So the music accompanied that, and then the police came and said, could we have that footage? And her husband said, I don't have it, and they shot her daughter right in front of her. So she's there, and there was another woman.
God almighty. Where was this?
This is in Samos, when there was 5,000 people, 7,000 people there. They had room for 500. And then another woman, I'm still in touch with them, whose son was taken away and tortured and then brought back to her. Every story is beyond belief. So they're all in the women's center that Holly built. You know, they know how to get the money and they build it.
Yeah.
And so that's like being in this eco community. I'm trying to do everything I did in the book that really moved me. Yeah. I would work in a business now that have that purpose in front of profit, because I feel good around these people.
But you're right. If people, businesses that run that way, that rewards hard work, creates, you know,
and fairness.
Stress for, and fairness, that there's equality, there's respect, you know, there's flexible working, there's real empathy that people's lives change and bend out of whack. And that,
and
you know,
they make more
profitable.
Money.
They do. They do. Because you know what? People talk about, you know, that Chinese model, work. And I don't wish to just say it's Chinese. It's absolutely anywhere that there is a capitalist superstructure. We work. How many sick days? How many people don't even count the amount of days we're losing to terrible mental health, to depression, to anxiety?
It's 100 billion is lost a year.
There you go. I knew you'd have the numbers.
Yeah, I got
the numbers. Yeah. So why isn't more being done? You make more money when you treat people nicely.
When you're happier.
Yeah.
And again, this isn't like this ego thing. You can't anymore say this is a new age small thing. I mean, in Unilever, which, and in England, Ben and Jerry's company are doing more for refugees than anybody else. It's business that's going to help the world, because governments have run out of the piggy bank. Yeah. And Dove soap, you know, because I went there, and there was a young girl, and she has body dysmorphia and was abused, and she runs the Dove thing and goes to schools and helps girls with, you know, poor body image. Then there's Tetley Tea. I have to look it up. They have, in India, they have a little slogan that says, come to the cafe and sip tea, or drink tea and chat. Okay, they invite. This is in India, and now it's going to be in the Emirates. Homosexuals and transgender to come in and have a cup of tea and talk about it. Do you understand how earth?
I mean, I spent some time in India and spent a lot of time with the transgender community, and for them to be able to sit down and express their pain with anyone, you know, because they're just so abused and maltreated, it's massive. Yeah, you're right. Business. I increasingly agree. I never would have agreed with you 5 years ago, but increasingly, I think
me neither. My dad was a killer. He was a businessman, and he said, "Screw them before they screw you," you know. And he taught me business. That was so appalling. I mean, I said this before. He was like the guy in The Godfather, you know, who puts the horse's head in the guy's bed who owes him money. That was my dad. He was a killer. So when people are in business, I kind of twitch a little bit. But now I've seen, there's a book called Conscious Capitalism, and there's another one called Firms of Endearment. I love
that. That's great.
Isn't it?
But you're absolutely right. That model of, and there's still a lot of corrupt and bad businesses out there, but the model of the killer businessman is changing. And when you look at, you look at some businesses that understand incentivizing good, you know, human beings are, you know, terrible, venal, awful creatures, predatory creatures, but you can incentivize them to do amazing things. I hope in my time I've been incentivized to do, you know, some good anyway. But you know, if you tell a community that they're going to be better off for encouraging the turtles to come and lay eggs on the beach by setting up eco-tourist spots where people can watch them, rather than just murdering them for oil for cosmetics, it's all good. And you can do that. I've seen it. I've seen places where, you know, communities have been changed, but it's not been done through just persuasion. You need to give them the funds.
You need to give them the funds, but also, you know, people, we work like neural Wi-Fi. So when you go into some of these companies, they do say we're putting purpose in front of profit. Don't think I'm stupid. They still make a profit, but people, when they're in community, and this is the whole theme of what I just wrote and why I'm in one, is that people become the best they are. You know, the humans are at their finest when their hearts are open, because even if they're just doing that widget thing, at some of these companies, they get a B certificate now. I went to it's a headquarters is in New York, where companies apply for a B certificate, which means they have to have fairness, equality, transparency, fairness all the way down the supply chain. They have to, you know, even if they have somebody in China, whatever, they have to have medical insurance, you know, everything's taken care of, and they keep their eye on it. And the companies that apply and pass get a B Corps certificate. And that includes Danone, Ben & Jerry's, Patagonia, where I worked. There's Guardian Media, Freud's, I think, have one. And in the future, people are going to only go, or it's going to be the coolest thing to have one of those stamps, because I think millennials are saying giving is the new taking. And there are apps being, because there's another chapter on tech, what's coming in tech that is good for humanity, not sucking us dry. You know, you have to look for it, otherwise roll your eyes and say, well, it's all shit. Well, then live in it. I mean, I'm not in control of your life, but
not yet. Come
but
on.
There is not yet. They're making tech now that's going to be an app that you can well, you know, it's already on the market, you can, but it'll be more sophisticated. Take and see, put it over the clothes you want to buy, and it'll be able to tell you if the person sewing on your zipper in Vietnam got arthritis from that, or how old the kid was who made those running shoes. That's just around the corner, and it's not going to be cool to be screwing people in a minute.
But what's great is of course it's going to mean that big business has to change, but it's also going to make us take responsibility more as consumers, as individuals, going, okay, I can see there's a £5 difference, but I can also see this garment was made with suffering and this one wasn't.
But it has to be mass. It has to be mass. Otherwise, you know, you and I are on, I'm not saying who's the enemy. We have to change.
No, you're absolutely right. The problem is we have enough money to make these decisions. We have, at the moment, it's only making ethical decisions, really, is the preserve of people who can afford to have choice. And it should be.
But the thing is, we have too much choice. That's the, kind of the problem now, is that we know how to deal with scarcity, but we don't know how to deal with abundance. That's why now more people are dying of obesity than they are of starvation. We aren't equipped for so much choice. And again, the reason we're so frazzled is the word I use, is because we're there's too much choice, so we can't think straight. Do I really need that 10,000th pair of shoes that I brought at 2 a.m? If my brain is frazzled, which there's reasons for it, you know, and I wrote about what, we're living in a culture that's never happened before. You know, we've always had stress. The Spanish Inquisition was stressful. We've always had anxiety. These things come with the human package, and they were perfect for our survival. But now, frazzled is a neurobiological word. It means stressed about stress. It means, oh my God, I shouldn't be stressed. Yeah, everybody else thinks I'm an idiot. Everybody thinks I'm a failure. That's never happened, this running monologue. And that's because, well, I wrote about why, but the point is that's what we're living with. And now we have to learn how to cool our own engines. And so things like mindfulness and things like re-educating kids and teaching people how to lower the cortisol, you know, the stress hormone in their own mind. It is out there. If you want to learn about it, do it. If you don't, sit in your own, you know, stew in your own juices. Don't buy my book.
But it's also, you're right about, if you open the most profound thing that happened through lockdown, and I didn't have a great lockdown because, you know, I'm anxious and I need to immerse myself in things and all sorts of blah blah, but going and being,
why do you have you, is that ADHD, is that when you have nothing to do you get
nervous? So I sort of try to master lots of things, so I sort of thought, oh well, my mum is really good at crochet, I'm going to learn how to crochet, so I did that, and then I it's almost like the Matrix, you know, when he goes, I know kung fu, it's like, I know that now, so then I'm going to do something else, but I can't stick at it, so nothing gets mastered, and instead there's just,
and then you hate yourself for it.
And I do, because I'm not,
but see, that's the layer, the frazzled. If you just didn't finish anything and you were at peace with it, you'll have a great life.
Yeah, so, but I'm never at peace. So then you go outside, you finally go outside, and you start populating your world with people who don't have the luxury of your life, and it's amazing how that changes. You know, just making 70 cheese sandwiches for people on the streets was the highlight of my week.
Yeah, I get it. That's community.
Fuck, I wish we didn't have to. I wish there was no such thing as homelessness, and God only knows with the amount
of jobs. Okay, but there is, Blanche, there is.
Don't make me go back there.
Yeah, Blanche, tear down those curtains and make yourself a dress. But I mean, that's why I'm in a eco thing, and that's why I like the, and I do Frazzled. You know, my Frazzled cafes are
Yeah.
3 times a week and all day, because I have, there's hosts that run them, is because I see 80 people and they're all ages and all colors, and everybody, I mean, there's got a structure. It's not a free for all. When somebody says what's going on and they talk from the heart, you can smell that compassion. People's, you know, young people with old, different colors, their heads are nodding, going, yeah, that's me too. Now I'm, you know, people say, well, that's just on Zoom. But the thing is, one lady said, I'm practicing on Zoom so that when I get out of here, I've learned to listen to people. And other people go, oh, you know, I've never been able to talk in public because I don't think I exist, but now I know people care. It's training wheels. It's training wheels for what we used to do automatically back in the old days when we sat around the fire. We have completely lost the key thing that makes humans healthy, which is community. Now,
Yeah. And if
yeah.
you look at the way that we now speak about what community, it's suddenly it's about all the emphasis is placed on a partner, and then the language develops about my other half, my better half. All we've reduced our horizons to the point where we don't even think we're a whole person unless we're with another. So it's just the one other person, and you have to tether to them, and that's everything. And it's so unhealthy.
Well, as I say, you know, people say, what should we do? I don't know. You know, you're making sandwiches and I have Frazzled. If everybody does a little step, you know, but as you say, I can already see changes in, you know, because I live out where I have a little writing place, and the town isn't using their town hall anymore to for the next fete where they're going to paint the chickens yellow. That'll be the now they're getting together and they're talking about when they're picking up the garbage. You know, things are switching a little bit.
I think it is
I
true.
hope it stays. I hope this isn't just a sentimental journey down, let's bang our pots on Thursday night. That's the real deal. If that didn't make you happy, you're not allowed to be human.
Every week I cried, and I sort of
I
thought,
cry too.
I sort of thought, well, maybe there'll come a week where I don't cry. But I cried for lots of reasons. It was multi-layered. It was we're honoring this venerable institution that we must try and keep, and we must stop the creeping privatization. We're venerating the people that put themselves in harm's way for us. But also, oh God, there's my neighbour, and she's waving at me, and I never see her. I never see. Oh, and up the hill, there's hey, how you doing? And all these people who, you know, outside of that, you know, still have their petty disagreements about planning laws and who's mowing what. And for one
Moment,
moment,
yeah.
we were all just a big mass of humanity united in one thing, which is thank you. And the act of gratitude, I find, and I know you've written about this, but being grateful, whatever your circumstances. And I just found that so extraordinary. I had given myself permission to say, oh God, thank you for the higher minds and higher beings that are just laboring down there. I live on a hill. I can
Now,
almost see it. I can almost see the big hospital. I certainly can see
oh,
my local hospital, and it's just like they're in this plague pit for me and us. It was amazing, wasn't it?
yeah,
And also noise. I don't know. You know better than me. The sound of it
yeah.
has that kind of primal agitation.
Well, you know, we have to rebalance who gets paid. I think,
For sure.
yeah, because in Finland again, the teachers get more money than most other occupations. I
Do
mean,
they?
they're revered. It's really special if you're a teacher.
Good.
But
But it really is special if you're a
teach the
teacher.
you know, all the consultants in New York can die and it won't make a difference. But if one garbage collector goes, you're screwed. So I'm
Yeah.
just saying. But I think I don't know if those things will change, but I think that, you know, there is something in the next generation. There hasn't been movement for a long time, but
No.
they have no choice but to
We've
get
been
angry, or they
acquisition.
can burn out. Yeah. It
Yeah.
doesn't, they can see what it did to my generation. We were just foul. We were all rebellious. Yeah, the world should change. And then we screwed the world blind and used it as an ashtray. I mean, I'm ashamed,
Yeah.
but I'm trying to turn it around now at the last second.
Doesn't matter. This is like you're like a Roman Catholic stream, you know? You can go right up to the wire being as bad as you like, but you can just turn it around on a sixpence. But it's true. It's, you know, my generation too. It's acquisition, acquisition. And even as you're acquiring, you don't know why you're doing it. We're just part of a system that's just consumption based.
But it's up to the individual rather than it's this party or it's this party pointing, you know, it's the environment, it's this and this. The sickness is in our minds. It's the frazzled thing. If you changed your mindset, We don't have, it's not waving crystals. If you change that, if you learn to lower your stress, yep. Oh
I'm
my
just
God.
proffering a crystal. Yeah, that's what I got.
Okay,
I'm just going to show
sorry.
it to you. Just need to deal with that.
Do you think
show
that
you.
Makes you a like a nicer person?
No, but I think it takes, this is what I think, right? Is I think that's going to take some radiation away from my computer, so I put it here. Because what's the worst that could happen? You just need
How
to suck that
educated
up.
are you?
I'm too educated, and that's why
Now
I've turned
look,
to.
and I have a seashell because it helps the angels have a landing pad.
Do you know what? I've got that as well. That, look at that. That's incredible.
Okay,
it doesn't matter what it's for. It
here,
can be
listen
just
to
something
this.
To focus my, what is that?
That's my ting.
You've got a Tibetan singing bowl.
Oh no, I have a real, I'm staying in somebody's house.
Right, I've got one.
Where's the singing
Sweet
bowl,
God,
bitch?
That's a gong.
That's a gong, I got a gong here.
Wait for it, wait for it. Can you imagine now? I'm gonna get out an enormous Tibetan trumpet. Hang on, I'm not, but no. I've been around there, but I haven't got one, hang on.
I'm showing you my bongs here. I'm showing you my bongs, but I'm plugged in. Okay, I'm taking you around my house. Well, it's not my house, I'm renting it. Sue?
Right, hang on.
Can I show you mine first?
Yeah, go on. That's just in.
That's not different than this one. Look, here's
Sweet God,
one.
I've got to try and describe what's going on. Right, Ruby's taking me around. She's just got a selection of vast, what look like sort of ceramic potties that she's banging. Are you sure they're actually Tibetan? Oh, you've got Buddha there. Good. You've got
okay.
Buddha.
So don't
right.
tell me about
I've got a lot of. I've got a lot of amulets that were gifted to me from various hill tribes, which I actually am not going to be made to feel ashamed about because they were given
no.
and received with... Right.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, deal with it.
Let's have a ting-a-thong.
Right, okay. Poor Dan, okay. Right? Dan produces this podcast.
Which
he's
is
now
better?
Got tinnitus and has gone mad. He's going to need some
better?
Mindfulness.
Do your ting.
Okay, this is my, and this, can I just say, came from the autonomous prefecture.
No, just well, one, just one.
All right, hang on, let me just do it, hang on, let me just do it. Listen to the sustain on that.
That's good.
Come on.
Sustain. Okay, listen to the ting on this.
All right, go on. Oh, that's short and sharp, but it's got... Oh, it has got a lovely half-life.
Whose is better?
I don't know, maybe we have to involve Dan. Dan, have you left us? You're still there. Dan, you make him, he doesn't want to come back. Right, who's
Dan,
better?
Which one's
I don't
better?
Mind if it's Rubes. You just have
I
to
don't
say.
Care either.
So your sustain was better, but Ruby's initial ting was stronger.
I call that a draw.
He's
Dan,
looking,
thank you.
He's looking for language. There's
yeah.
no words that
he's
have been
just
invented.
Like, where has this gone? The fact is that we've
it's
been
like
able.
Battle of the bands. This is battle of the tings.
But with no warning, we've been able to find a selection of Tibetan singing bowls to hand to be able to do it. We're what's wrong with the world. We really are. We've acquired these trophies, these badges of Zen.
Yeah, but they didn't, they're not like an Hermes bag. They're tings.
That's true. They're tings. Yeah. Yeah. And I, yeah, they are tings and they are special tings as well. do you still, I will always remember that with great love that we were able to do that. So do you still like every day meditate? Do
yeah.
you? Do, no,
yeah,
you
I
aware.
Have to.
I'm sorry. Do you?
I have to because I get the weather condition of what's going on in my brain so that if a depression is coming, I get a forecast and then I can do certain things like shut down social media rather than having dinner parties where I invite people I've never met. I was so crazy when I had a depression because we like to get busy to show people we're fine and we're not fine at all. That's what depressed people, you can always tell. I called Nigella because I suddenly had people over for dinner to ask her how to make one of her lamb shanks. I had people at my house, I don't know who they are.
See,
I learned
she's
how
so
to-
lovely. I bet she told you.
I don't remember, I was too crazy. And then I went to every event I was invited to. Now I don't go out at all. And I went to an event where Celia Emery coincidentally was there. A woman took me and it was for a charity called Save the Puffins.
Okay.
A woman of Scottish, whatever, gave a lecture about how terrible it was that the puffins couldn't land anymore on rocks in the Orkneys because of the winds. They couldn't lay their eggs. So I said, because I was insane by then, so shoot the fuckers.
Okay. That's a spicy interjection.
Anger is another sign of Great Depression. And then I was institutionalized. And when they took me in the institution, I was going, no, it's, I have a tennis lesson. I can't go in here. Wait a minute. I'm taking up macrame. Where's my German teacher? And then they gave me a shot and I was knocked out.
I'm not laughing at institutionalization or anyone else's, but it's just, it's very familiar to me. I have a wonky brain because I have a pituitary tumor, and if I forget to take my medication, then I can really veer into the realms of the deeply insane. So I hope you understand it's the laughter of someone who recognizes
all the
signs. And just when it was really bad, I just walked in the path of oncoming traffic, Finchley Road at rush hour, just going, well, why would you take this road at every single motorist, until it became clear that perhaps I needed to
change. And you were walking against traffic?
But just furious.
Yeah.
Almost like I was stock-taking and saying, but people just beeping. And all I remember really now is the glare and the flare of the lights. And as you say, time and, you know, whatever, you know, you think things, you lose their heat. But it was bad. It's bad. Yeah. And what I need to track back to the puffins just for 1 second, because this is how my brain works, which is, if a charity, and I love puffins and all animals, and I respect puffins.
I wasn't supposed to be there.
No, of course not. But if the reason that they need saving is an atmospheric condition, what can you do about that? You can't change the wind direction.
You get wind machines. We all go up there and we blow those suckers the other way. But let me tell you, this is such a coincidence. You know what I'm doing tomorrow at 6:30?
No.
Here in where I am.
Yeah.
They've taken a consensus, and it's not now, but 60,000 geese or therefore go past my window out, because I'm on an ocean, go past one way and then they come the other. The sky almost turns black. That's how many there are. And then they land at 6:30 in the morning in the bay. Tomorrow morning at 6:30, there's a woman here. There's a group that go there at 6:30 and stop the people from shooting them. They go every morning, and I'm going tomorrow. Talk about saving a puffin. It's such a coincidence. I'm in Scotland and I'm going to be there in the bay, and they can't shoot when you're there. And there are about 60,000 of these geese. Imagine the noise, but I'm making up for the insult to the puffins. Imagine. I'm saving geese.
Yeah, you are. Imagine the guano. You're going to need, can you imagine what your mother would be thinking? The woman that put cling film on a sofa, you're about to stand underneath the flying cack of tens of thousands of
but luckily geese. I know what to do with cling film.
It's true.
I know how to work it. I can cover everybody.
Isn't the universe weird, though? I mean, I
say you're talked complete... about puffins, and I'm doing this tomorrow. Yeah. The weird, and we both have tings.
Yeah.
And I've written a book called And Now for the Good News.
It's your dad rising. It's the killer businesswoman. She's like, okay, yeah. I've had this freeform chat. It's all gone swell. Yeah,
get
probably
the book
pop
out.
In the yeah. Just get yeah. the yeah, get the retail.
You know, yeah. Otherwise, what are you wasting your time for? And now I light a cigar.
Yeah. Hang up the suit on the peg, or give it to somebody. Give it to a woman to hang up for you. I want to ask about lockdown, because specifically, I mean, I know, so that you have your meditationary practice and you are medicated and all those things that you've done to sort of safeguard your well-being. Mm. How was it for you? Because you, like me, are quite a sort of toppy, kind of chatty human that perhaps fixes too much self-worth to job and...
No, I'm not, Sue. That's
not anymore.
So
not anymore, maybe.
Well, it was either pushed out of me or, it's funny. I talked to Louis Theroux a couple of days ago, and he was my nemesis. And it was really brave of me to do it. I've never spoke to him. In my mind, he took my job. The last time I saw him, I gave not one, but two BAFTAs. And we had a conversation for about 2.5 hours where I just said, here's what, it's not you, here's what you represent to me. Because at a certain time, I was fired from my job. It wasn't fired, I was asked to do things that were so disgraceful that eventually I got so fucking depressed. I had to be put away. I have depression anyway. You know, TV shows don't make you depressed. It's a disease. But coincidentally, I got really ill. And when I came out, I thought, I'm going to learn about my mind. So in a way, I have to thank him for him and Al Niento, you know, because I was too old to be on television. I was 50. So I would have, by now, I would have been made into chopped liver. But
I'm 50 and I'm a bit on television. I mean, I do feel that.
Got 10 more minutes.
this sort of leather.
This show is not going to finish. Let me just tell you, if you're 50, you're done. No, you might be okay. But
That's good to know. I feel validated.
You'll be okay. But I wasn't going to be okay. And I only had that disease of celebrity. I had the disease. I caught it from people who were famous. But anyway, I had to wean off. I got on tubes saying, do you know who I am? And they go, no, pay the fucking ticket. You know what I mean? Because I thought,
Did you do that? Did you do the do you know who I am?
In the beginning, I was insane. And I started going to school to become a psychotherapist. Gradually, I was just a student. You know, I forgot what I did in show business. I had new friends. And I'd carry my books and go to the cafeteria. And then I had another breakdown. And then I thought, I'm really going to figure out how my mind works as much as I can. You know, not, we don't know anything. We're in the foothills, but I want to know what I would have studied had I had a brain when I was young. So I crashed a course in neuroscience at UCL, and they were all 21. And I said to them that this isn't a joke. I said, I have that disease where you age really fast. And anyway, I stayed there, and then I looked up, and then they let me go with them, but I had a car, so I got kind of popular. Yeah. And then I thought, where's the most evidence of what works as far as being able to lower the cortisol? Because I knew what damage that did, the stress hormone. And I was fried. You know, whatever got me into show business, which was the drive of a Rottweiler, in my 30s and 40s started to backfire, and I'd crash into walls. Anyway, you know what I mean? I'd use the same power for nothing. And then mindfulness and cognitive therapy had the most evident, you know, most positive results, not 100%. So I found the guy who invented mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, one of the guys. He was a professor at Oxford. And I said, I got to know what happens in your brain. I have to know. I don't want to wave crystals, which you have. I know, don't hold it up.
This is a woman who just smacked a sort of luminescent potty to make a noise out of it. I'm not going to take that from you.
It's not luminescent.
We're all doing what we need to get by.
It's turquoise. I'm not luminescent.
I look luminescent on the Zoom.
Okay. So he said, if you want to learn about the brain, you got to get into Oxford. Like you. Did you go to Oxford?
I went to Cambridge, but to be honest, who cares?
Yeah, well, now when you're in your late 50s, I cared. And now I was really interested in how the mind works, not when I was young. And it changed you know, to write a book on neuroscience and comedy, Louis can't take that from me.
Was Louis terrified by the fact that you pinned all this on him?
No, because I did it. You know, I had some people holding my hand here because it had to be done with no anger and no agenda. It was just, here's what I've projected on you for all these years. And you might like to hear it or not, you know, but I'm not going to be interviewed and go, hey, let's talk about my book. This is going to be fun. If you're asking me to talk to you, I'll talk to you. And he really, it was like a closure. You know what I mean? I feel
that's great.
Yeah. I feel like that A was courage, and B, I said, it wasn't really you, but you know, because of my dad being so violent and men taking things from me and stuff, it's not about show business. It's about what you represent. And it always is. And I think to be able to say it is kind of healing.
I think I need closure with Louis Theroux because we were both in The Weakest Link. And he just knows many more facts than I do. I mean, millions of times.
I don't know any facts.
I don't know any facts. My brain doesn't work that way. And I won. And he should have won, really, because he knows more facts. But I got better questions. And I have this sneaking suspicion ever since then he hates my guts. I'd really like to talk that out.
If you had to talk to me 2 days ago, I could have asked him.
Nah. But there'll be time. I know I'll get to see him and I'll go, Louis.
Yeah, Ruby did it. No, I know.
God, anyway, poor man. I feel better. He must just think these insane women are just sort of.
He didn't. He got it completely.
He's cool. Completely. He gets it. Yeah. He's a wise.
But in my mind,
it
was to do with taking food out of my mouth and my kids because I was kicked out by, in my mind, two men. And had I not reinvented, and I was just an actress clinging on and saying, please put me on Love Island, I'll eat my young, and put me on skates, you know, I'll remove my uterus with my teeth. You know, when you get desperate, but luckily I got into Oxford, and luckily the Queen gave me an OBE for my mental illness. And I have to thank Louis for that.
It all works out the way it's got to work out. What interested me when you were talking about fame and celebrity is the people that are so lost in it who go to restaurants and stuff and don't expect to pay for things and then just go, do you know who I am? Those are the people, it seems to me, that have no idea who they really are.
Oh, no, but you know, when I interviewed celebrities, which I didn't like, because I used to do documentaries that Louis I took know. From me, but the
you
celebrities...
You said closure. You said you've got closure.
No,
you can't
I know,
say
but
that
I'm
now.
Saying it with love.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's I love the documentaries. And then they said, do some celebrities. I didn't know they'd make me do it for 5 years. Is that it was really a study of the illness of fame. Yeah. So I enjoyed it. Then I got it, right? I could have written a thesis. And I said, okay, can I go back to doing documentaries? And they said, no. But I really studied fame like it was an illness. And I mean, I made great friends out of it, but it is an illness.
What is it John Irving that said, or John Updike rather, who said fame is a mask that eats the face?
Oh,
that idea that it's
good.
Ivy. Yeah. I think
very good.
Somebody smarter than me will correct me if I've got that wrong. But yeah, it is. It's that idea that ivy just surrounds the tree, but it's not decorating the tree, it's eating the tree.
Oh, that's good.
You said that you caught the celebrity disease. But it's strange to me because you actually were one of the few people providing a critical perspective, critical narrative on that.
I know, but when you play tennis with a pro, you become a pro. So because I was, not when I was in documentaries, but when I started, you know, hanging with Sharon Stone and things, I got excited like I was a little girl and prom queen liked me. Yeah. It rubbed off. I started tap dancing for him rather than treating, you know what I mean?
I
was
I'd
overexcited.
Be like If I'm I was around pretty people, if I was around pretty people,
I was around
I would
pretty
just,
people.
I wouldn't believe, because I've never been around pretty people. They're not my, they're not me and they're not my tribe. But, you know, when a pretty person at school would just like look at you or be friends with you, it's like the
That's
sun
what
shot.
It was like.
That's terrible,
yeah.
isn't it?
I know. I tried to make them like me. And then there were some people like Donald Trump who really hated me. Really
That's a badge
hated
of honor, though.
That's a badge of honor.
I forgot you interviewed him.
Yeah.
I remember, of course, Imelda Marcos. I can remember, well, you know, these things I remember. But my God, you could have just ended it.
I could have busted
then.
Him if I wasn't so over. He made me too nervous, so I asked stupid questions. If when he said I want to be the next president of the United States, I would have just leaned forward and said, "Tell me what your plans are," without trying to be funny, which I was. He might have hung himself, but instead I tried to be, you know, I did, you know, when the fight and flight goes, you can't think straight anymore.
So was he intimidating? I mean, what was he?
Scary. Oh, but like my father squared. He was the scariest human being I've ever met in my life. The hatred coming off him.
Why? Because you
because I wasn't sexy. You know,
well,
he didn't
not,
understand.
Not to him. Not to him.
No, but I wasn't playing that card. And then at the end, when I got in a car with him and the sound was off, he started telling me what he likes to do with women and how he treats them. And rather than me going, oh, Blanche, I'm so, you know, I'm so offended. I started being cruder than he was. And then he liked me because I was one of the guys.
And then you go home and you feel shame.
I go home and I feel shame, but I got him. You know what I mean? I got him.
Well, you saw him. Yeah.
Yeah. And I matched him. And then when the show was aired, my next guest was John McEnroe, who said to me, I met Trump and he said, if he ever sees you again, he's going to kill you. So I guess I did get him, just like my dad.
It's amazing
said,
though, isn't it? How
he's
we just
kill me.
Idle threats from, yeah.
Idols.
The idea that someone can even say that glibly is just,
yeah.
Well, I'm glad. I hope for a second somebody got under his skin.
That's why I have my tinger.
Yeah.
If he ever comes near me, I'm ready.
I'm going to do that. And maybe, do you know what? This seems like a good place to end. If we just clear the energy. We've mentioned the Trump word.
Okay.
God, Dan was right. My reverb is so... Oh, God, you've got them all going. Okay, I can't be there.
I got the mother of gongs.
Thank you. And I hope to see you in the real world and remind you
too.
You are quite brilliant.
No, you are.
And that
you
even
are.
Even in struggle, you managed... Your struggle enlightens and shines a light rather than implodes into darkness. So thank you.
Thank you.
Which is one
you.
Way of saying, you're fucking great. Thanks for your time.
And you are.
And Ruby's book, And Now for the Good News, To the Future with Love, is available to buy now. I don't know if you noticed, but she was plugging it throughout. As always, the music in this episode was by Waiting for Smith, and you can listen to more of his tracks on YouTube and Spotify.
Yes, it's true. When I'm down and I'm blue, all I do is stare at you. I'll be heading east to find my peace, where the desert feasts.